the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winninger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, which is a show I've never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, we are on the second episode of season two.
Yep.
I'm not going to say what I think of this episode.
believe me, we'll get into that.
And Lindsay's back. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be back, guys.
So what have you been up to since the last time you watched Star Trek with us?
Actually, I was just talking my woe is me story when I walked up here. I got my wisdom teeth taken out.
Which, oh, man.
Hey, hot tip, listeners. Don't get your wisdom teeth taken out at age 31.
Yeah, just leave them in there.
It's horrible. And I did that. And so I've just been kind of narked up for the last week.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just keeping busy with the day-to-day.
Being narked up, what shows have you been watching?
Oh, rewatch Stranger Things again.
That's awesome. That was so good.
Yeah, when are you going to start a podcast about that?
I don't know. Have we missed the boat?
Yeah, no.
We may have.
No, just rewatch it now. Make a podcast, and then let's get ready for season two.
I'm only halfway through it.
Oh, so. Man. Well, let's watch the second half.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's get on it.
All right. Well, we're talking about Where Silence Has No Lease.
Where Silence Has Lease.
Oh, it has lease.
It has lease.
Okay.
I still don't know what
lease.
The hell that means. But
neither do I. You mentioned, Patrick, it's from some poem.
From a poem by Robert Service, is what Wikipedia says.
Who's Robert Service?
It's some Canadian poet.
Of course. Of course he's Canadian.
Right.
All right. Well, fun fact, there are no new sets in this entire episode. It is truly a bottle show. Do you know the phrase, a bottle show?
I've heard it before. I'm not entirely sure what...
Breaking Bad was really good at doing bottle episodes where you don't leave the main set and you stay within it the whole time. So if you think about season one of Cheers, for example, there's a lot of bottle episodes in that where they're just hanging out in the bar. And so they tend to rely heavily on writing instead of special effects and other things because, you know, it's about character development, everybody in one enclosed room.
It's also way cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. And you could tell that this episode was very cheap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree. Just kidding. I totally agree with that
assessment. No money on this episode. Yeah. And my biggest beef of the episode, which we'll get to later, is about them using the same model for this sister ship in the Enterprise that should not exist.
Don't give away too much.
Don't
give away too much on this show from the 90s. Please.
I've gotten in trouble for spoilers.
I know.
Yeah.
What a world.
I know.
Well, we could do Patrick's log, since there was no captain's log in the show.
Wasn't.
Or at least it didn't open with one. It was weird.
Yeah, that is strange.
Yeah.
There's only been one other episode where they haven't opened with Captain Picard, or at least somebody telling us what's going on.
Yeah. But this is what was going on in the real world on November 28th, 1988, when this episode came out.
Man, we're already into November 1988.
Yeah.
The future is now, friends.
It was a fine time to be alive.
I don't know about fine, because I'm looking at the headlines right now. Gorbachev vows to end unrest, uphold unity. Soviet leader says strife is jeopardizing reform, warns of military crackdown in Kremlin. So there was a huge, lot of ethnic strife in the Soviet Union, especially in Armenia and Azerbaijan. And the Soviet Union was, threatening to break up with, the ethnic nationalism. And Gorbachev was like, hey, don't do that. And of course, it did happen.
Wait, can I ask a question real fast?
Yeah.
Patrick Winninger, whenever I listen to this podcast, you know a lot of things. Are you reading that from somewhere, or are you just a vault of information?
No, I'm reading from this, but in college, I majored in history with a focus on Russia.
Do you think you're better than us?
No,
okay.
I am not.
Patrick Winninger is wicked smart.
No. I just majored in a thing that will make me no money ever.
Really important.
It's like, you know what? I was like, in 10 years, I'm going to be doing a podcast where we say stuff about the news, and it's going to be about the Soviet Union. So I better major in that.
Mm-hmm.
I better take two classes on the fall of the Soviet Union specifically so I can mention it a lot on this podcast. That's where the money's going to be in 10 years.
I'm really glad it's paying off for you.
Yeah, it's totally. Yeah, it was an excellent investment and not a waste of time at all.
Just like this podcast.
Right.
Here, here.
But yeah, that's pretty much the only thing going on.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's it.
Yeah, well, there's like Pinochet is mentioned, and it's just like,
yeah,
he was a dictator of Chile that we helped install.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And
that worked out perfectly.
Oh, right? It did, yeah.
Yeah.
He's mad at our ambassador or something. That's all that's happening.
Well, I still maintain it was a fine time to be alive then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that's all that was going on.
It was when America was great.
Yeah. Those were better days.
All right. Well, let's get into this episode, shall we?
Sure.
I guess.
Where's...
You guys, can I just say, like, yeah, you brought me back for a second episode, which I'm thrilled about because I love watching Star Trek. But what another shitty episode you brought me back for.
I know. I'm sorry.
Do you guys, are we beefing?
Stinkers in a row. Last episode, which one was it?
I don't even remember because it was so. Oh, it was the one with Deanna Troi getting married and her mom was there and her mom was annoying.
Right. Yeah.
You guys, are we beefing and I don't know about it?
Yeah, I'm just being exceptionally passive aggressive. Like, you know, there's a really rough episode coming up. Better get Lindsay back in here.
Right.
All right. Well, you guys are the worst.
Yeah, where silence has lease, which I think, Lindsay, you were saying earlier that this was based on...
It's based
on an original series.
Yeah, there's an original series episode called The Immunity Syndrome, and this episode is basically a complete rip of it, except they added a little, like an actual living being to it,
yeah,
and a little bit of extra unnecessary scientific exploration.
Yep.
But yeah, this is a rip from the original series.
It kind of makes sense because like we're still on the WGA strike.
Right.
So they're using like spec scripts and things like that.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if they just like Frankenstein together a script based on an original series plot.
Yeah. I mean, they are totally grasping at straws at this point. You can tell.
You can tell.
Yeah.
It's a bottle episode. We're on the second episode. Usually they hide bottle episodes in the middle because, you know, it's when they want to progress character but don't want to progress plot too much. So they put these types of episodes deeper into
the season. Like zero character progression. Oh.
I know. Well, that's why it's not the best episode in the world, is because they didn't take advantage of what makes a bottle episode great.
But they actually started out in such a way that I was like, oh, there's going to be a lot of character progression because it starts off with Worf and Riker and the holodeck, where they're like exploring Worf's really violent tendencies and they're in this massive fight and a training exercise. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a really Worf-driven episode. And that was not the case.
Nope.
And they even hint. Well, yeah, we should.
Yeah, I should probably explain that.
What's going on.
Sorry,
so yeah,
so excited by the nothingness of this episode.
Yeah,
the silence that has lease in this episode.
So much lease.
But I'm glad you brought that up because, like, it opened, and I thought this is an episode where stuff is going to happen, and we're going to see a lot of Worf, and neither of those things happen. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just like talking on the bridge about like, oh, you know, we're charting empty space. That's, I guess, their mission this time, and Captain Picard mentions about how he's worried about Worf and Riker. And I'm like, well, what's going on with them? And we see them in some jungle and they're like killing skeletons.
They're killing Skeletor. More specific.
Yeah. It was a Skeletor guy with an axe and, you know.
It was a man in a Skeletor.
Yeah.
Let's be extra.
Yeah. Worf just like murders him with a knife glove.
Yeah.
And he's about to go in on Riker too because he's got the bloodlust and Riker makes him stand down. So Riker orders Worf to stand down because he's got the bloodlust and is starting to come after him. And, you know, he does. And then Riker's like, oh, do you do this every day? And that's when you kind of realize as a viewer, it's like, oh, they're in the holodeck. They're training. They weren't actually in any danger. And Worf says something like, yeah, but those experiences are too personal to recount.
Right.
So it sounds like a sex thing almost.
Oh, it is a sex thing.
I think he's like avenging his family. Because if you recall, his mother and father were killed.
Oh. Oh, no. I think it's a sex thing.
Yeah.
Is there any doubt in our minds, like with Klingon lore, that their violence is not tied extremely to their sexuality? I even think like there's some mating episodes with Klingons where it's like, oh, their sex gets like extremely violent.
They show that actually in the first season.
Worf says like, the reason I won't sleep with a human is because I would kill them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, now, this is way in the future. This is in Deep Space Nine. But Atrin and Worf are having a relationship with one another. And she has to go to the medical area over and over again for like a sprained neck, a bruised rib. And she likes it because she's like violent as well. But they like hurt each other during sexual intercourse.
Yeah, no, totally. He's totally masturbating in the holiday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what it's there for, right?
Well, yeah, I think
if we're being honest, that's what it's there for.
Among other things.
That and violence. And yeah, I think it's similar to, what is it, 1984, where they have their like 2 minutes of hate.
Right. This is just where they get all of their aggression and weird like sexual stuff out.
Right. So later in this episode, when we're watching, they could be emotionally devoid of everything. Right.
Yes. Because, yeah, all of it happened. All of the things that are exciting happen in this first 2 minutes.
Right.
Oh, totally. I was like, oh, this episode's on track to be a really great episode about Worf and his character development. Like I started out saying, not the case at all.
No.
Really disappointing. But this is when I also paused and I turned to Patrick O'Rourke and I said, I am for now, for once, seeing how racist the show treats Klingons.
Yeah.
Like the treatment of the Klingon lore is so bizarre.
Yes.
Yep.
And it was crazy.
Yeah, and it kind of gets worse for a little bit before it gets better.
What is that about?
I don't know.
They keep, it's just, all right, so Heart of Glory was pretty good for Worf, I thought, because it actually treated him like a character that has motivations and a backstory and all this stuff, like why this is why he is the way he is. But then he's right back to the guy that screws up all the time.
Does he screw up, or is he just like...
Well, he just makes poor decisions.
Yeah, I guess.
But even in this episode, like in this opening scene, when he's getting overtly aggressive and he's about to attack Riker, it's like, you are a trained Federation officer.
Right.
He went to the academy.
Yeah.
And you're still this way?
Yeah.
Like, come on, bro. Get over it.
And they made his treatment of how violent he was getting, they made him look very ape-like in his mechanism. Like, I'm uncomfortable with this. I'm super uncomfortable.
It's pretty uncomfortable.
And it just keeps getting better from there.
But it doesn't in the episode because, like, we go to the bridge and they're just like, they're talking about some anomaly in space that they found. And they're like, oh, it's a hole in space, but it's not a black hole. And they're like, they're talking about this for like 5 minutes. I don't really care.
It's a smudge.
Yeah.
It's a smudge in space.
It's a little smudge in space. And Data and Wesley are doing their science talk stuff. And
good summation.
Right. I don't care about this thing. I don't really know what it is.
Right.
I know they're gonna examine it.
It's just a black hole in space.
Right.
They know it's not a real black
hole.
Yeah,
they're like shooting probes into it. This scene takes like 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, and then Worf breaks in and he's like, I think it could be this monster.
It's a Klingon legend that it's like a space dragon that devours vessels, and he realizes that was a dumb thing to say.
I know, he corrects himself.
Right. Finally, Wesley is like, well, we can go close to it. I found out where the borders of the anomaly are. They go close to it, and then it just like appears on the screen again, and they're like, oh, we're inside it now.
It was the most anticlimactic devouring I've ever seen.
No one is terrified that they've just been like sucked into a wormhole.
You didn't even shake the ship.
No.
It was just like, it literally made a sound effect like, whoop. They were outside of the being, and now they are inside of the being. Done.
Yeah. And it's just like, there's nothing there. They're in a void of nothingness. And they can't set a course out. It seems, other than that, though, that like everything is pretty much normal. Like
On the ship. Yes.
But outside of it, there's nothing. So like they try to drop
the vastness of nothing.
Right.
Call it, right?
Yes, the vastness of nothing. Looks like you're looking to infinity, I think is what Riker said. Mm-hmm.
So they set like a beacon.
But isn't that just space?
Yeah.
Like when you look out into space, it is still the vastness of
Well, the difference is that they keep this, they keep, like set a beacon to try to track where they are, and as they keep going forward, they keep coming back to the beacon. Right. So they're like going in circles or like approaching where they were in the past.
Which
constantly.
I thought this was rad. I was like,
yeah,
oh,
that's interesting.
Going in space loops.
Yeah.
It was a space hamster wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets weirder because like they find a Romulan warbird. You know, they see a cloaked vessel, and it turns out to be that, and, you know, it fires at them. They fire at it, and it just immediately explodes and disappears.
Can we talk about that for a second? Because I feel like there's bigger nerds out there that can answer this for us. Because I remember turning to you guys at one point and saying, what is the point of having a cloaked vessel if you can still sense that it's there?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like that's a huge problem
but
with the Romulan.
I think you can only sense. Now, all right, bigger nerds than me, correct me here. But if it's in warp... Because they can see the trail if it's in warp. But
right.
They can't, if it's in
impulse.
Power.
Thank you. If it's in impulse power, then they can't see it.
But it was just like right there next to them. Like I sense that there's a ship next to us. Nerds out there, please explain it to us. I don't know.
Yeah.
I need to know how Romulan ships work.
Yeah, the whole cloaking thing is kind of mysterious.
Yep.
Well, anyway, they sense this ship.
Yeah, they sense a ship. They blow it up. There's no debris. So it's like it wasn't real, apparently.
And it was too easy.
Would they probably would have definitely like died, right?
It would have been an epic battle.
Yeah.
Between a Romulan ship, yeah, and the Enterprise. Like, those are huge fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they destroyed it immediately, and there's no debris. So then they sense the USS Yamato, which is apparently their sister ship.
Okay.
Oh, God.
And my biggest beef with this episode is we're told there's only one Constitution class ship, and that's the Enterprise. And what do they see? A sister ship that looks exactly like the Enterprise pull up in front of
them. Well,
how does this ship even exist?
Memory Alpha says it's a galaxy class.
Oh, shut up, Memory Alpha.
But it looks exactly the same.
It looks exact same. Even when they're inside it, it's the same ship.
They talk about the floor plan, and it's like, it should be here. So it's like, so it's exactly the same floor plan as the Enterprise.
Yeah. How is it different?
Yeah.
Well, this is what I said, and I maintain this to be true. Maybe the insides of the ship. Not like the inside, like the computer systems are different.
Yeah, it could be it.
Why would you build the same ship? And then
for efficiency's sake.
And use less, I don't know.
Why reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
Exactly, just have
they're
more
using the same hull, but just it's got different systems. I can buy that.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Fine, I've been outvoted on this issue, but it's so frustrating to me because it looks exactly like the Enterprise.
Why?
Yeah. They've done nothing to change
it. Did you want the Enterprise to be special?
We're told it's special, and it is special.
Hey, nothing special.
Wow.
That's how I feel after we watch this episode.
Lindsay, I think you're special.
Okay, you know what? I don't need your platitudes. You need to patronize me.
I think we're all beautiful and unique in our own ways, and so is the Enterprise.
Hey, guys, we're all Constitution class vessels. But
no,
this,
we're not. There's only one.
There can only be one.
But this is a galaxy class, and there's no. They find no life signs. Riker is like, well, let's send an away team. Picard says, you know, it's got to be the minimal amount possible. I don't want to risk too many lives. So he sends Riker and Worf. Miles O'Brien is at the controls of the transporter.
Yeah.
He sends them over.
He sends the most important people over. They always are sending the most important
people
over.
It's like, we need a minimal
over.
Team. Let's get the second in command.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And our
like, you're not fucked if that guy dies.
Yeah, exactly. So on board, and it looks exactly like the Enterprise. Like, the lights are off. That's the only difference. Yeah, because they're using the same set.
Hey, but you don't know what's behind those walls. You just don't.
It could be completely different.
Patrick O'Rourke's looking at me like I should be murdered right now. But you don't know. That's the point.
I understand your point, but I think it's garbage.
Fair enough.
But the one way that it is different is that, so Riker's like exploring the halls of the Yamato, and he hears a scream. It's Worf. Worf is running to him. He's like, I heard you screaming.
Yeah.
So it's really weird. They keep going in loops and stuff, and the layout of the ship doesn't make any sense. Like, they find the bridge, and they say, oh, this bridge should be, like, four decks up.
There's two bridges!
Yeah, and then they see another bridge, and they keep, like, looping back into these two different bridges, right. And Worf just gets pissed. And he throws a fit, and he's, like, trying to open this turbo lift door. He's like, there shouldn't be two bridges and two Rikers. And Riker's got to calm him down.
Reflection of Riker in the other one.
Yep.
Yeah, basically they're stuck in a bridge loop. Every single time they open a door, they're back in the bridge.
Yeah.
And they're already there.
Yeah.
In the bridge. Does that even make any sense?
It doesn't make sense to me.
Well,
but
it's just like the beacon thing earlier.
Yeah. They're stuck in a loop.
Yeah. Which again, space loops. I'm in.
Yeah.
That would be cool if this were the focus of the episode, but it wasn't.
But you know what? Let's stop there for a second. In a way, it was, because they expended an exorbitant amount of time.
That's true.
Setting up the premise of, like, this space hamster wheel that they're in.
This is true, yeah.
They're literally rats in a maze, which I know we're going to get to, like, the whole premise here in a second.
Yeah.
But I would say more than half the episode was about them being lab rats and, like, just the lab that they are in.
Yeah.
Which was extremely uninteresting.
But I kind of feel like they didn't really do anything with that later.
Correct.
You know, if they had followed that to some conclusion, it could have been cool. But as it, like, all it means for us watching the show is that they're stuck in this hamster wheel. The Enterprise can't get a lock on them to bring them back. And they need to bring them back because the relief communications officer, according to this, his name is Ensign Haskell. I don't think they ever said his name. He finds a hole in the void. They can get out.
Yeah. And to pause here for a second, Wesley just disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, it was only a few minutes later, they've swapped out Wesley with this new guy.
He needed to take a nap.
But they don't even explain it. Wesley's not even going like, oh, I'm sleepy.
Child
like,
actor just disappeared. Loss.
And then later in the episode, he just comes back.
Yep. Well, yeah, but for a purpose.
Yeah, well, and his purpose is to say it's like, oh, hey, guys, there's a hole in this thing. We can actually get out. But not everyone's on the ship. Picard doesn't want to leave people behind. And they eventually, like, get Worf and Riker onto the ship. I don't know, like, what happened to make that happen.
Yeah, they can... The communications start working again.
Yeah.
Conveniently. The Wi-Fi signal gets stronger.
Yeah. is that how that works, basically?
Yes.
Do you think Wi-Fi is still a thing in the Federation?
I don't know. I don't think they have cloud computing, though.
Yeah, let's talk about things that maybe don't exist in the Federation.
That we already have.
Like, the cloud. Do you think the cloud still exists, or do you think it got better?
Well, I guess whenever they talk to the computer, they're referencing the cloud.
Yeah.
I guess.
Do you think...
But all their data pads, like, they have to have individual pads that have information on it. It's not like they all just carry around the same pad and swap out info.
True. So basically the cloud just gets better in the future.
No, I'm going to say it gets worse because you can only access specific information on the cloud through specific devices.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, that kind of sucks then, I guess.
Yeah. It's because we got no more Steve Jobs.
Yeah. He's dead and all the
10
good
years
ideas
ago, we had cash. We had jobs. Yeah. Now we got no jobs.
When I was saying this before, this is a total non sequitur, but I bet you they don't have wisdom teeth in the future.
No.
Yeah, they probably evolved past it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you take...
We're just stuck in a pat loop, by the way.
Right, yeah,
you guys are in a pat loop. I feel like you got to take the good with the bad. Maybe the cloud got worse, but you don't have wisdom teeth anymore.
One thing that they haven't evolved past, though, I forgot to mention that Dr. Pulaski is on the bridge for some reason. And she's just been saying, like, horrible bigoted stuff to Data this whole time. She refers to him as it.
Yeah. She just shows up to be mean.
Right. There's no reason she should be on the bridge. And I think at one point later on in the episode, she's like, yeah, I don't know why I'm here. I'm going to go to my medical thing.
Yeah. Well, I think Picard brought her on there because he's like, if it is a life form, like, can you tell like what we're looking at here? But even she was like, I don't really know why I'm here.
Yeah.
And then she goes into some really bigoted robot talk, bigoted droid talk. All droids matter. Somebody needs to let her know that.
They keep doing this thing where she's just like extremely antagonistic towards Data.
Yeah. Also, Deanna Troi is the one who needs to know whether or not they're in a living...
Yeah, well, Picard asked her, he's like, hey, can you tell us? She's like, nope, I know what you're going to ask. I have no read on this thing.
But then halfway through, she does.
Yeah.
She's like, she wasn't thinking about it properly.
Oh.
That's what she says. She had to think about it on a higher level or something.
Yeah.
How did she even come to that conclusion, though? You guys, what a sloppily written episode.
It is. Yeah.
Very poorly written.
But one of the things is, like, so when the hole opens up in the void again, it just keeps closing on them. Mm-hmm. And they can't get out. Even though everyone's on the ship now, they should be able to leave. They can't. And Dr. Pulaski mentions, it's like, oh, it's like we're rats stuck in a maze or something. And then this weird... disjointed 1988 CGI face appears, some lawnmower man looking dude. He introduces himself as Nagulum.
I thought he looked kind of like a chimpanzee.
I thought he looked like a chimpanzee mouse cat hybrid.
Yeah.
And he's like, but look, I made my face look like your faces, which tells me like you really don't understand Nagulum.
I
that
think
was his name,
that's
right?
His name, yeah.
Najilum? I think it was Najilum.
Najilum? Okay, I didn't hear. It was like said briefly.
It doesn't even matter. But this thing, we'll call him Nag. He just really, he's like, look, I tried to make my face look like your faces to speak with you. It was like, no, but you look like a cat mouse. Yeah.
This is actually in the
hybrid.
Uncanny Valley now. So this is weirder. This is worse for us.
Yeah.
It's puppy monkey baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you brought us in here and now you've offended us by telling us we're ugly.
Yeah, and he starts asking about...
Thanks, Nag.
Yeah, he starts asking about people's constructions, and he's like, oh, Dr. Pulaski, you look different. What is your construction? She's like, well, you know, I'm a female. Troi is also female.
Well, she also spazzes out for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
He makes her spazz out. So now you know.
So is that him checking her out?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like shoving her against the wall, and examining her, basically.
In a very poorly acted couple of series.
Yeah, that's what she did. Yeah. And this part was kind of weird where, like, he asked, well, why are you different? And Picard's like, well, it's for the propagation of the species. And he goes, demonstrate it for me, please.
Good joke.
Yeah. Oh, and they're like, no, we're not going to do that.
Probably the best line in the entire episode.
Yeah, it really was.
There,
yeah.
So. Like, highly unlikely.
But then it starts to get really dark. When Nagelum or whatever,
Nag,
he asks about their limited existence, which fascinates him. He says, like, you exist and then you don't exist. And then he just kills Haskell in like a brutal way. The guy like shrieks and goes into rigor mortis in the fetal position. He's just dead.
Hence why Wesley was not on the bridge, because it would have been Wesley.
It would have been Wesley.
Yeah, but they need to explain why Wesley leaves, and we see this new guy. And of course, as soon as you see a new guy sitting up there, you're like, well, he's dead.
Yeah.
There's no way he's making it to the end of this episode.
No, especially if he's got the red on.
Yeah.
Also, what a great theme to an episode that we're finally introduced to.
Yes.
And that is poorly explored.
Yeah.
But what a great idea of, like, what is death and what does death mean? What does it mean in the future?
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do these characters approach it?
Right.
Well, pretty poorly in this case. Because, like, he's just dead. Haskell is never talked about, really, after this. But Picard is pissed. He's like, you know, we can't let you do that. We're going to fight you. And Nag, he's like, well, you know, in order to completely understand death, I'm going to have to keep experimenting, and I'm going to, it'll only take about a third of your crew. A third to a half. I'll kill them, and, you know, then I'll leave you alone.
At which point I said, this guy's the most useless scientist ever. It's like, right, he's like fighting for a grant that's never going to come.
Yeah.
Well, it's also murdering rats, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, my experimentation is just to kill all of the animals I can.
Yeah, and he says I have to observe every kind of dying.
So what end?
Yeah.
We never know.
Because he doesn't get death because he doesn't die, so he doesn't understand
what it. What are the different kinds of dying?
I don't know. I assume dismemberment of
choking,
some kind. Yeah.
Getting hit by something, getting stabbed,
cancer.
Getting shot.
Cancer.
In your sleep.
There's a lot of different ways to die.
But that's all. But my point is, that still all results in death. Like, the process to which you die doesn't really.
I don't really know what he fails to understand.
He's a puppy man, baby. What does it matter?
Yeah. So Picard calls a staff meeting in that conference room thing, and he's like, there's really only one way we can get through this. We have to initiate the auto-destruct sequence.
We all gonna die.
Yeah, we can't let him do it. We have to, like, have some kind of bargaining chip to let him know. It's like, well, we will end your experiment before you carry it out. And we're going to do it just by threatening to kill everyone on board, which is kind of nuts.
It's a huge thing that I wish they would have done way earlier in the episode, because it would have been interesting.
It would have been, yeah.
Yeah, how do people cope with that?
Yes.
Because it sets a timer, like, immediately. It's like, yep, this has to be solved in this time or everyone dies. Like, stakes are there immediately.
Yeah, instead of Riker's like, 20 minutes. I was like, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
That's like the worst amount of time.
Yeah.
You can't really get anything done in 20 minutes.
Well, it's so interesting. So, like, when they go in to initiate the self-destruct sequence, they all agree. They're like, yeah, we're going to do self-destruct. And so the captain and Riker both have to initiate the self-destruct sequence. And then the computer asks them, how much time do you want? Why is that even a function? Like, it should just be like, oh, I'm just, you know, it's 10 minutes. It's like the prerequisite of time that was programmed into the ship. What a horrible thing to ask somebody. When would you like to die?
Yeah. 20 minutes.
Yeah, and Riker just says, like, oh, 20 is a nice round number.
It's like, no. Okay. At risk of being gross, all these people are going to start boning, right?
Some of them probably will.
Probably.
Right? It's like your last experience on Earth, your last connection with humanity.
Here's what my hope is. You either, like, what? You bone, you find somebody to bone, you maybe, like, kill a man just because you've always wanted to, like, just to see what's going to happen with that. You tell someone you love them. Can you call Earth from the ship?
Well, not from where they are.
Not from where they are. Their communications are messed up.
Okay, so you're not calling your mom to tell her that you love her.
Right.
But you could do other things. You could hug your child. You could eat a steak. They'd probably eat a steak, right?
Yeah.
They could go have a drink. They could cry. They could do something. 20 minutes seems like an ample amount of time to, like, do something humane.
Yeah.
No, 20 minutes is not enough time, because by the time you pick out the steak, You've only got, like, by the time you make the decision to do the thing that you're going to do with the rest of your life.
No.
You've only got like 10 minutes left to eat the steak
what you're
or 10
forgetting.
Minutes left to have sex. We don't have enough time to make the choice and do the thing with a good feeling about it.
Yeah, you're forgetting that 20 minutes is a nice round number.
Yeah. Well, and
I'm just saying.
Counterpoint. I'm contending that if you know you only have 20 minutes, then you're going to make a decision. Like, that's where your basic humanity is going to come in. Because you're going to choose a thing. Like, I have 20 minutes. The first thing that comes to mind. That's who you are as a person. That's what you're going to do.
Well, mine is clearly boning, apparently. Yeah. Why are they all hooking up?
They should be fornicating in the halls everywhere.
Well, they've evolved past that. They don't have wisdom teeth. They don't have any base urges anymore.
But they do because they have a holodeck.
Right, I know. That's their outlet for it. That holodeck is insane right now. Yeah. That's my guess.
Everyone is jizzing everywhere all over the holodeck.
See, Pat, you got on to me when I mentioned about the vaporizing tool in the holodeck.
I know,
it's clearly a self-cleaning mechanism.
Absolutely.
Well, you know what would have been great? If they would have talked about this on this episode.
And they didn't at all.
That's the most interesting part is like, what do you do with 20 minutes left?
And they didn't even make, I don't even know that they made an announcement like, hey everyone, I'm really sorry, but like, you're all going to die.
I assume people on the ship know.
How do they know? How do those people know such a thing?
Yeah, it didn't show Picard telling everyone on the ship. Maybe he was just trying to avoid pandemonium by not telling them, but that's still kind of messed up, right?
It's extremely rude.
Yeah.
It's
rude.
So they could go order a steak?
Yeah. Like, do something. Like, give these people a chance, man.
Well, at least Troy and Data know, or who we think Troy and Data are, because they come to talk to Picard in his quarters, and they're like, asking him all these questions about death. And it's kind of weird, because it's like, Data's like, oh, what do people believe happens when they die? And Picard is saying, well, some people believe that there's, like, heaven, and some people believe nothing happens. They still believe in heaven in Star Trek, apparently. That's canon.
But that's not true.
Yeah, what? They've definitely humans evolved don't. Beyond religion, I thought, at this point. And so when Data asks him, well, what do you believe in? He's like, and he goes this very existential description about, like, I believe there's a reality beyond this reality. Like, he was basically talking about the Matrix, right? I mean, what was happening right there?
Yeah.
It was a very bizarre line of reasoning, but all in that vein of in the late 80s, early 90s, you still could not like eschew religion. Like you still had to like have something in there like, yeah, God could be real. Like you had to keep that as a line.
If I were on the Enterprise though, and I kept running into things like space gods trying to experiment on me, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I'll probably believe anything you say at this point.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, if you think about this creature...
It's basically
god. It's basically God.
When
Q
they went
is
to,
basically God.
Yeah, when they went to Edo or whatever, they had that planet, that thing orbiting the planet that was basically God. Like, they keep running into things like that.
If God means higher power, so, God definitely exists in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I can understand some kind of ambivalence towards religion, because it's not like they would still be religious in the sense that we understand that.
Right.
But they keep running into stuff that's like, immensely powerful.
Oh man, this is really fucking with my head right now. So basically, it's like we as people couldn't even write beyond. Like, we still have like the religious complex in all of these episodes in a society that has evolved beyond religion because we can't even see past it ourselves. Oh, I need a drink
How
right
great
now.
Would it have been
I know.
Writers talked
exactly.
about this in this episode.
If they had more than 20 minutes to discuss these things,
they
but
cracked an egg and then threw it in the garbage.
Instead, what happens is Riker immediately realizes that the Troy and the Data that he's talking to
Picard.
Oh, I mean, yeah, Picard realizes that they're not them, and he gets the computer to zero in on Data and Troy's location. They're on the bridge, so he's like, "Oh, this is that Nag guy."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to work, buddy. And he's like,
Well, because they say it's really selfish of you to kill everybody, and you shouldn't kill everybody. I want to take my chances.
Yeah.
But they were calling him Jean-Luc, and he's like, no way.
You don't call your
That's
captain then.
You
yeah. And he's like, you guys are fakes.
So they immediately vanish, and you know he goes back to the bridge, and he makes sure that you know everyone's still there. And just a few seconds to spare, they get the computer to stop the countdown.
Well, because Picard doesn't want to stop the countdown until there's 2 seconds left.
Right.
Because he wants to make sure that they're actually out of the void as opposed to this being another illusion.
Yeah. So they shut down the countdown and the computer is like asking if they concur, and Riker's like, yes, absolutely, wholeheartedly. And Picard's like, yeah, you could have just said yes. That's fine, buddy.
I think it was the most amount of emotion showed about the fact that they might die.
Right.
And which, led me down a line of questioning in my head of, have we advanced a society so far in the Federation where people are like cool with dying? They're like, everyone's like really calm about it,
yeah,
and past it. Or do people just really not know that they were about to die?
Because I can't imagine Picard didn't send an announcement.
A memo?
Yeah.
Maybe shot an email around.
An email. It's like... Yeah.
With a bunch of other things in it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or not. There's a bunch of dipshits replying and doing the reply all with like jokes. And it's like, guys, stop.
Everyone's like, everyone's sending death memes around.
Yeah.
I hope there's death memes in the future.
I hope there's... Do you think they've evolved beyond email in the future?
We haven't seen email in Star Trek, so...
So, obviously.
Yeah, I guess
it's all video chats.
It's all, yeah. Speaking of video chats, Picard has Nag on his little desktop computer in his ready room.
Desktop. That's very
They still got desktops. And he's, like, talking to him, which is weird, because he's left the void. He doesn't have to deal with this guy anymore. And Nag is telling him, it's like, oh, I got a lot more information than I realized. And he keeps saying that, you know, this is what I've learned about people. It's like, you're too militant. You have no tranquility in anything. It's amazing that you've survived this far. And
he's just like, you guys are a bunch of dicks. Yeah. Is basically what he says.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're too aggressive.
But Picard says, you know what? All that's probably pretty much true. But we do have one thing in common. We're both very curious.
Oh, great.
And yeah. And Nag's like, well, yeah, you got me there. And Picard says, well, we may meet again, but next time it'll be out among the stars, which I don't really know what that means.
They're not going into that.
They're not going into this thing again. Yeah. So then Nag fades off. Picard goes back to the bridge. Wesley's back in that seat where that dude just died.
Safe and sound,
Wesley
haunted by that guy's
ghost. Shows up again. No announcement.
No one let him know. It's like, hey, by the way, a guy just died there.
Yeah.
Heads up.
He could feel his ghost the minute he sat down in that chair.
Yeah.
Are there ghosts in the future?
I hope so.
I do too.
Yeah.
But then Picard orders them to, you know, set to their original course to explore, but to steer clear of any holes. Or Riker says that.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that he says that to Wesley, because I bet you Wesley can't help but steer clear of any hole that he comes across. Bada-bing! Oh. Poor Wesley was definitely going to die a virgin in this episode.
Yep.
He was so close.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even see him scrambling to try not
to.
I mean, he was so young and so calm about the fact that they were facing death, which is why none of this episode was believable.
No.
I mean, especially when you got Nag telling him, like, oh, you guys are really aggressive and you're irrational. It's like, actually, I feel like they handled this whole death situation
pretty
with
well.
A great aplomb, actually.
Yeah, the only time they were aggressive was Worf inside the fake Enterprise.
Yeah.
Right.
And when they shot the Romulans.
Yeah, and when Picard says, we'll fight you, when Nag killed someone and said, we're going to kill half your crew.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
What would Nag do in that situation? Not fight? Baloney, not having it. He would just have like ended all of them.
See, right. I thought that "we'll fight you" line from Picard was very out of character. Like, he normally does not respond that way. Like, aggression is deep down his list of solutions.
He just could not stand for this aggression against his crew.
But okay.
I mean, I can kind of see it.
That's so out of character for
him. I can kind
of
see it.
Normally, he would be like, why are you doing this? Or he'd be looking for a deeper reason instead of just like, I'm going to fight you. That's a Worf response.
True.
Yeah, but I can kind of see it after the guy just announces that he's going to kill half of his crew after killing a crew member in front of him.
Well, and I think they've already come to the conclusion that they are just lab rats. And he's like,
right.
Nah, I'm not standing for that.
I'm a captain.
He's trying to let him know that there will be consequences.
Yeah, he's not like, you know, why are you doing this? I think he's already come to a conclusion about why he's doing this. Or it, or whatever. I don't even know what Nag is. Does it matter what Nag is?
Space monkey.
This genderless, neutral dickwad floating through space.
All right, Lindsay. Well, this is the part of Hat Trek where we like to rate the episode. If we thought it was amazing, fantastic, must watch Star Trek, it is set to kill. If we thought it was like, it's okay, comes up in the queue, watch it, you know, but don't go seeking this one out, we set to stun. And if it's like, don't watch it, skip it at all costs, it's boring, it's terrible, we leave it in the holster. So what did you think?
So I'm going to go for a half and half. I'm going to go in between holster and stun. And
you're going to shoot yourself in the leg.
Yeah, I'm going to I'm just going to shoot for injury. and it's not look, I don't think this episode is very good. I mean, it's better than the last episode you guys had me come in
true.
For. But it's fine. We'll make it up in the future. You know, but it's one of those things where like there's some good exploration. It's a little bit of a mind fuck. I kind of wish like I had been on like some drugs or something while I was watching, because I feel like I really understood what was happening. but yeah, I wouldn't necessarily go seeking it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Patrick?
Leave it in the holster. I mean, there's so many missed opportunities here that it could have been a decent episode, but they just weren't there, and it was super boring for the first 30 minutes. Nothing happened until the last 10 minutes of the show. And the other thing is, like, you could just completely skip this one. You don't need to know what happens here. It's never going to be brought up again.
Or will it?
I doubt it.
What if they encounter Nag again?
Well, in that case, like, you just have someone explain to you. It's like, yeah, that's the weird, like, early 90s computer-generated meme that's like the dancing baby that tries to kill everyone. Other than that, like, you don't really need to see it.
I'm going to give it...
Uh-oh.
Set to stun, simply for the fight at the beginning.
Okay, that's fair.
You could skip the rest.
That fight was
so
cool.
So watch the fight at the beginning when Worf is battling the fake Skeletor. And then skip the episode. It's pretty fun to watch them use the holodeck in a different way. We've never seen them really use it for combat training, except for once, I think, with Tasha, and they were doing some judo or something in there. But this was like a full-on dungeon crawl.
It was pretty cool.
And that was cool. I was into that.
No one was boning. No one was chilling. They were only fighting.
Yeah, and Riker does that sweet move down that pole where he slides down.
Kicks
and
the dude in the face.
Watch that, then skip the episode.
Well, I told you, like, I had a lot of emotions about Riker now that he has a beard, because he looks a lot like my husband.
So let's get into that.
Yeah. So I have a lot of feelings now that we're into season two.
So let me ask you.
Yeah.
Did he have the beard when you met him?
No.
Like, how much like Riker did he look in the first, like, month of dating?
Not like him.
Interesting.
He didn't have a beard. Now he has a beard. Because I'm always forcing him to have a beard. Just kidding.
Okay, now that's awesome.
But they have very similar features. So I don't know what that says about me. Maybe I had a secret Riker complex my whole life and I didn't even know about it.
Are you attracted to guys who act like Riker?
No. I can soundly say that my husband, while he does not act like Riker, he has a sweet beard like Riker.
But I believe last time you were on this show, you said that your husband has a thing for Deanna Troi.
Oh, yeah. So
what?
What does it mean about
Riker
us?
Has a thing for Deanna Troi.
Oh, my God. We're just living out this parallel universe love story. That's what I'm going to tell everybody.
Any last thoughts about this episode?
I just wish... I have so many wishes and hopes for it. That's all. That just never came to fruition.
Yeah. Just a lot of wasted potential.
I will say that if you watch this episode, definitely go back and watch the original series, The Immunity Syndrome, because the way the whole episode is devoted to, like, what are they going to do in the face of death, like imminent death inside of this hole that they can't get out of. And so I think The Immunity Syndrome kind of accomplishes what this episode hoped to accomplish.
That's good, because this episode did not accomplish much.
Nope.
Nah.
All right. Well, is there anything you guys want to talk about before we get out of here? Anything you want to plug, like your Twitter or anything like that?
No, I mean, are you guys tweeting much these days? I don't really like to tweet much anymore.
I tweet quite a bit.
Ugh, Twittering. Instagram, if you want to see cute pictures of my dog, follow me at Lindsay Baish. There's a lot of cute pictures of my dog on there.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important.
Keep listening to Pet Trek. Give us a rating on iTunes. That kind of helps us up in the rankings. And listen to Politicked Off. That's the other show that I have with Zach Mast, which if you listen to this week's, Zach is on vacation. So it'll just...
So it's going to be a great episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He ain't here. Yeah.
Zach, if you're listening, I miss you, buddy. And please follow me on Twitter at Pat Likes to Tweet, because Facebook is for noobs. Listen to my other podcast, Making New Friends. I haven't released an episode in a couple weeks. I promise to get one out very soon. I've been really slacking and I gotta get to work.
Yeah, right.
I plan on editing one right now, in fact.
Ugh, save it. Save your promises for another day.
And yeah, those 5-star reviews are super helpful. We got another one last week, but, you know, we got a lot more listeners than we have reviews, so if half of you go out and give us a review right now, we'd be probably the most popular or the most reviewed Star Trek podcast in the last week.
Wow, setting a high bar here.
Right, there you go.
Let's see what's out there. Away from holes.
Peaches. Hot sauce. 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 Peaches. Hot sauce.